Good day. This is Stephen Krantz. I'm your instructor for Math 411, which is real analysis. And this is the September 16th lecture. And I'm making here an audio recording to accompany the Beamer slides that you've seen on Monday. So as you can see here, the first screen is the opening screen. Then there's a picture of me, which you can enjoy at your leisure. And what we're going to talk about today is the construction of the real number system. This is very important. Anybody can wake up in the morning and write down a set of axioms and say, this is some new number system I've created, or this is some new mathematical object that I've created. But it would be very easy for those axioms to be contradictory, to lead to all kinds of logical problems. And the way we get around that is we construct a model for the object that the axioms are supposed to be describing. So the important object for this course is the real number system. And we're today what we're going to do is we're going to construct the real number system R from the rational number system Q. And, so we're taking it for granted that you know Q, that Q has been constructed in some other context for you. For example, it was constructed in Math 310, if you took that here at WashU. And we're going to use the method of Dedekind cuts, named after Julius Dedekind, because it uses a minimum of new ideas and is reasonably brief. And the number system that we'll be constructing is an instance of what the algebraists call a field. There are many fields in mathematics. The complex numbers form a field, the rational numbers form a field, and the real numbers form a field. So let's just say for a moment what a field is. A field is a set, S, equipped with two binary operations, usually called plus and dot, which we think of as addition and multiplication. And for a field, we demand that the following axioms be satisfied. In what you're reading here, A stands for addition, M stands for multiplication, and D stands for distributive law. So the axioms for addition are that S is closed under addition. If you add two elements of S, then you get another element of S. Addition is commutative. It doesn't matter in which order you add two elements of S. Addition is associative. X plus the quantity Y plus Z equals the quantity X plus Y plus Z. You've seen all these things before, of course. There is an additive identity called zero, so that if X is an S, then zero plus X is an S, or if you like X plus zero, I'm sorry, X plus zero is equal to X, or zero plus X equals X. And the last additive axiom is that each element of S has an additive inverse. If X is an S, then there is an element minus X in S, such that X plus minus X equals zero. So these are all familiar to you. You've used them in other contexts. Nothing very exciting here. But those are the first five axioms of a field. Now we have the multiplicative axioms, which are similar. S is closed under multiplication. If X and Y are in S, then X dot Y is in S. Multiplication is commutative. If X and Y are in S, then X dot Y equals Y dot X. Multiplication is associative. If X, Y, Z are in S, then X times the quantity Y times Z is the quantity X times Y times Z. There is a multiplicative identity called 1, so that if X is an S, then 1 times X equals X times 1 equals X. And the last multiplicative axiom is that each non-zero element of S has a multiplicative inverse. If X is in S and not 0, then there is an element X inverse in S, such that X times X inverse equals X inverse times X equals 1. The element X superscript minus 1 is sometimes denoted by 1 over x, although it's better to use the notation x superscript minus 1. The very last field axiom is that multiplication distributes over addition. If x, y, z are in S, then x times the quantity y plus z is x times y plus x times z. Okay. So you can check for yourself that the rational numbers form a field. So the rational numbers are a model for a field, so we know that the field axioms are consistent and will not lead to a contradiction. Now we're going to construct the real numbers. And the real numbers, it turns out, are a collection of cuts. What is a cut? Let Q be the rational numbers. A cut is a subset C of Q with the following properties. C is not empty. If S is in C and T is less than S, then T is in C. If S is in C, then there is a U in C, such that U is bigger than S. And finally, there is a rational number X, such that C is less than X for all C in C. That's a cut. How could you think of a cut in your mind's eye? You should think of a cut as a set of all rational numbers to the left of some point in the real line. Since we have not yet constructed the reals, we cannot define a cut in that simple way. We have to make an indirect definition, which is what we have done. But what you should picture in your mind for a cut is all the rational numbers to the left of some position. So the cut is a rational half line. Notice that if C is a cut and S is not in C, then any rational T bigger than S is also not in C. Also, if R is in C and S is not in C, then it must be that R is less than S. So all of our cuts are left-hand rational half-lines. Okay. So now we're going to define an ordering on the cuts, and we're going to define some arithmetic operations on the cuts. So if C and D are cuts, then we say C is less than D, provided that C is a subset of D, but C is not equal to D. So thinking back to Math 3.10, you can check for yourself that less than, as I've just defined it, is an ordering on the set of all cuts. Now we will introduce operations of addition and multiplication. And these operations will turn the set of all cuts into a field. If C and D are cuts, then we define C plus D to equal the set of all lowercase c plus lowercase d, so that C is in uppercase C and D is in uppercase D. We define the cut 0 hat to be the set of all negative rationals. And of course, 0 hat will end up being the additive identity. Now we're required to check the field axioms A1 through A5. So we'll say a few words about that. For A1, we need to see that C plus D is a cut. Obviously, C plus D is not empty. If S is an element of C plus D and T is a rational number less than S, then write S equals C plus D, where C is in C and D is in D. And then T minus C is less than S minus C because T is less than S. And we'll call S minus C D. And S minus C, of course, will be in the cut capital D. So therefore, T minus C is in the cut capital D. And C is in C, so therefore we've written T equals C plus T minus C, which is in capital C plus capital D. A similar argument shows that there is an R bigger than S, so that R is in C plus D. Finally, if X is a rational upper bound for C, and Y is a rational upper bound for D, then of course X plus Y is a rational upper bound for C plus D. And so what we've done here is we've verified that C plus D is a cut. So we've shown that the set of cuts is closed under addition. And since addition of rational numbers is commutative, it immediately follows that addition of cuts is commutative. And associative follows in a similar way. Now we show that if C is a cut, then C plus the additive identity 0 hat equals C. For if C is, little c is in big C, and if z is in 0 hat, then c plus z is less than c plus 0, where 0 is the rational number 0, equals c, and therefore capital C plus 0 hat is a subset of capital C. Also, if c prime is in capital C, then choose a d prime in capital C so that c prime is less than d prime. That's one of our axioms of a cut. Then c prime minus d prime is less than 0, so c prime minus d prime is in 0 hat. Also, c prime equals d prime plus the quantity c prime minus d prime. Hence, C, capital C, is a subset of capital C plus 0 hat, and we conclude that capital C plus 0 hat equals capital C. So that shows that 0 hat is the additive identity. Finally, for axiom A5, let C be a cut, let minus C be equal to the set of all D in the rational so that little c plus little d is less than 0 for all little c in the capital C. If X is a rational upper bound for C and C is in capital C, then minus X is in minus C, So minus c is not empty. And by its very definition, capital C plus minus capital C is a subset of 0 hat. Furthermore, if z is at 0 hat and c is in capital C, we set c prime equals z minus c, then c prime is in minus c and z equals c plus c prime. Hence, 0 hat is a subset of capital C plus minus capital C, and we conclude that c plus minus capital C equals 0 hat. So that checks your additive inverse property. Now let's look at multiplication. And this is a little tricky, but we can do it. If C and D are cuts, then we define the product of C times D as follows. There's five cases. If C and D are both positive, then C times D is the set of all Q in the rational, so that Q is less than C times D for some little c and capital C, some little d and capital D with C bigger than 0 and D bigger than 0. So that's fairly intuitive. You multiply two positive cuts by simply multiplying their elements. If capital C is bigger than 0 hat and capital D is less than 0 hat, then capital C times capital D is the negative of capital C times the negative of capital D. So what we're doing here is if capital C is positive and capital D is negative, we define their product in terms of the products of capital C, which is positive, and negative capital D, which is positive. And similarly, if capital C is less than 0 hat, capital D is bigger than 0 hat, then C times D is the negative of the negative of C times D. So again, if C is negative, D is positive, then C times D is the negative of C times D with a minus sign in front. And similarly, if C and D are both negative, then C times D is defined to be minus C times minus D. So, you know, the very first definition of multiplication was for C and D both positive, and the other three are if one of them is negative, and you define it in terms of the positive definition. The very last definition for multiplication here is if either C is 0 or D is 0, then C times D is 0. Of course, that's the way it should be in a field. So for our convenience, we have defined multiplication of negative numbers just as we did in high school. The reason is that the definition that we use for the product of two positive numbers cannot work when one of the two factors is negative. It's now a routine exercise to verify that all the cuts with this definition of multiplication satisfies M1 through M5. The proofs are similar to those that we gave for addition, and we're not going to repeat them. You can do them as an exercise. For the distributive property, one first checks the case when all the cuts are positive, reducing it to the distributive property for rationals. Then you handle the negative cuts on a case-by-case basis, just as we did for the definition of multiplication. So now, summing up, we now know that all the collection of cuts forms an ordered field. Denote this field by the symbol R. We will next verify the crucial property of R that sets it apart from Q. And you know what that crucial property of it is, because we talked about it the first day. Namely, theorem, the ordered field R satisfies the least upper bound property. That's certainly what we want to know. So let S be a subset of R which is bounded above. Define S star to be the union of all the cuts which lie in S. Then S star is clearly not empty and is therefore a cut since it's the union of cuts. It is also clearly an upper bound for S since it contains each element of S. It remains to check that S star is the least upper bound. In fact, if T is less than S star, then T is a subset of S star and there's a rational number Q in S star minus T. But by the definition of S star, it must be that Q is in capital C for some C in S, so therefore C is bigger than T, and T cannot be an upper bound for S, so S star is the least upper bound for S. And that's it. We've shown that every set bounded above has a least upper bound, and therefore the reals that we've constructed are exactly the real numbers that we want. We've shown that R is an ordered field that satisfies the least upper bound property. It remains to show that R contains a copy of the rationals in a natural way. And in fact, if Q is a rational number, we associate to it the element phi of Q, which is capital C sub Q, which is the set of all X in the rationals such that X is less than Q. then obviously C sub q is a cut. And it is routine to check that phi of q plus q prime is phi of q plus phi of q prime, and phi of q times q prime is phi of q times phi of q prime. So we see that phi represents q as a subfield of R, which of course is what we certainly want to be true. And that's it for today. I'll see you on Friday.